I can create something, an experience that is much more enjoyable at the level that people deserve. So fundamentally, I think now after 10 years, I've sort of distilled it into there's something for me around making.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. My guest on today's show is a testament to perseverance on my part. I've been chasing this interview for quite a while. But first, the story. I was given a packet of tea in a Christmas hamper in 2017, and that was before the podcast had really launched. As a marketer, I was inspired by the branding and the packaging on this tea. The packet had a story, and you would think the brand had longevity. I did my research and discovered it was a business based in Australia and run and owned by Corinne Noines. Now, because of the packaging and the branding, I assumed it was a family business and that Corinne was the next generation. How wrong was I? Corinne is the brand creator and founder of Madame Flavour. Now, her story is one of full-on brand and marketing career for working in the industry for over 20 years, and she was working with some of the biggest companies in Australia at the time. Our conversation today is about how she was looking for change and fell into the tea business. Now, while this project was small, she had big plans, and from the beginning, she set out to surprise and delight tea drinkers. And she succeeded on this on many levels, pioneering the Madame Flavour brand and launching eco-friendly pyramid tea bags. The business started from the spare room of her home. With her industry experience, however, she pitched it to the major retailers and won the business. Now, 10 years later, Madame Flavour is a household brand name with over 100 million tea pyramids sold. In her words, 100 million tea moments experienced. The range is sold in luxury hotels, airlines, cafes, restaurants, and some of the major supermarkets in Australia, New Zealand, Asia. And of course, it is available in the UK. So why my persistence? Well, Corinne actively retains the bits of her business that she enjoys, and that's travel, tasting and testing to manage her business. So it was hard to get dates that match because she really is Madame Flavour tasting her way around the planet. I hope you enjoy our conversation. So this is Life, Passion and Business, and it's a rainy day here in Scotland, but my guest today is on the other side of the world, who I'm sure is probably a lot hotter than I am today. I am with today Corinne Noines, and she is Madame Flavour. Now, this is an interesting point here, because Corinne and I have been having this conversation for nearly a year. My persistence has paid off. Corinne has finally said yes, she'll be on the show today. So Corinne, thank you very much for saying yes, and welcome to the programme.
Oh, you're welcome. It was only a function of busyness. Nothing personal.
I didn't take it personally. I know everyone's busy, but I just thought it would be fantastic to have a conversation. Now, look, let me tell you why I found you. Literally, you arrived as a Christmas present in 2017. Oh. Someone gave me a packet of your tea. And I really enjoyed the tea, and I thought, this is fascinating, Madame Flavour. So I started to explore about it, and then I discovered who you were. And I thought, wow, I have to have you on the podcast. And so here you are. So tell me, Corinne, what was the story? How did you become Madame Flavour?
The short version of the story is that I'd had a 20-year corporate marketing life. With large multinationals, and I felt a little empty, a little dissatisfied, and so I started my own business.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about the universe providing a little earlier, and in this case that's very much what happened. I didn't have an intention to start a business. I actually was interested in moving into the not-for-profit sector, and mm-hmm. I met a woman who had a tea business and needed help, and I just started helping her, and mm-hmm. it evolved from there.
Were you always interested in tea? Was that a passion for you?
No, not particularly. In fact, for me, working with her had me look at tea in the supermarket, and the passion for me was, when I look at what's in the supermarket, this was 10 years ago, this is so dull and boring, these dusty little unattractive packets on the shelf, no wonder I don't drink this. So as a marketer, I got very interested in a category that looked really lackluster, and what I get passionate about is when I feel like people are being somehow, I'd call it almost ill-treated in terms of the quality of what's being sold to them. So I got very passionate and felt like I can do better, people deserve better, I'm going to do that. And kind of off my marketer's brain went down the path of starting a tea business.
Wow. And you knew, I guess, working with someone in the tea business, you knew how to start one. Was that a good relationship? Because obviously you're now in competition with her.
Well, in fact, my request was that we create this together. She didn't want to, because my background was selling to supermarkets or marketing to supermarkets in that mass space, and she preferred not to at the time. So we happily, fondly parted ways, having both got something from the relationship, and in mm-hmm. fact are in contact still today. So I started from scratch. I did not know how to start a business, but having worked for 20 years in large businesses in marketing, which is the centre of the business universe, I'd had exposure to, you know, to sales, to supply chain, etc., and, or, you know, to corporate development, financials, and I just, I don't know, just kept taking the next step and the next step.
Wow. So did you, is this you blending tea on your kitchen counter, or did you take this a little bit more seriously in a different way?
No, it kind of was that. So I'd been in a role previously where I looked after a pasta sauce brand, and my mother's French. My dad lived in India for many years. They were real foodies and travelled a lot. So I grew up in a household that loved great food. And tea isn't incredibly complex in terms of the ingredients. So I literally just started by understanding what are the most important types of tea, tasting a whole lot of them, getting a sense of what I did and didn't like, then buying ingredients, and exactly starting to just blend and experiment in my kitchen.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And that, there must be a drive, is that, there was obviously a passion to do this and something, because you brought something into this. It's like, was it the tea, or was it the idea of the business, or what was it that was driving your at this point?
It was the idea of I can create something, an experience that is much more enjoyable at the level that people deserve. You know, so fundamentally, I think now after 10 years, I've sort of distilled it into there's something for me around making people happy, just making people feel good by providing something beautiful, something more than the everyday mass commodity that I became a little disillusioned with.
Yes, I can testify to that, because obviously I've got the classic Earl Grey Deluxe, and it's a lovely tea, and also the bag looks beautiful in the kind of looking like silky material.
Yeah. So and I guess the starting point, because I started without the intention to start a business, and therefore didn't particularly have capital. It was done in the spare room of the house, but the starting point for me was, I need to talk to tea drinkers and really understand what tea means to them, you know, why they drink it, how they drink it, how they feel about it. And I was lucky, because So I went to my local high street shops and accosted people and said, hello, I'm thinking about starting a tea company. Would you come and talk to me about tea? And so literally people came to my lounge room and I ran research, you know, informal research groups. And one of the things I understood was that whilst most people were drinking paper tea bags for the convenience, in fact, they really related to leaf tea as real tea and wished that they had the time to make it. Then it so happened, someone, as I was going through this project, gave me a tea pyramid that they'd found in a cafe. And as soon as I saw it, I just thought, this is the perfect elegant solution. It's a silky bag for leaf tea that you make in a cup instead of having to do the whole pot piece, which was just too much for people. So, and they had not been launched in Australia, so there was this beautiful coming together of, you know, serendipity, which meant I knew I had something that could potentially be significant versus just another paper tea bag.
I was shocked to discover that paper tea bags contain plastic recently, and I was really quite shocked as to how much plastic they contain.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, when I came across that pyramid bag, I discovered after doing some research that they generally at the time were being made from nylon, and that wasn't something I wanted to do. So I did some more research and I found a company in Japan, in Osaka, which was doing a fully biodegradable green cornstarch-derived plastic, which is what we have used for that entire period. So we were quite sort of pioneering in terms of having a recyclable, compostable bag right from the beginning.
That's great. And it's, I think it's one of the, you know, the plastic now has become such an issue for everybody. I think it's and it hasn't really hit tea bags yet. It comes into the media in the UK and then disappears again. But the plastic problem is pretty huge.
Absolutely.
So I guess your job gets you to travel the world a bit, does it?
It does. And travel is, in fact, I look at it now and I think it really has combined several things that I love. You know, I love nature. And one of the things, apart from that, obviously I am blending with herbs on a regular basis, I also use some Australian native plants that I have 40 acres of land. Or do hectares? Anyway, I have 40 acres, which is quite large, of land in the mountains, which is mostly uncleared rainforest in Victoria and Australia. And some Australian native plants grow there, such as mountain pepper, which is a very peppery-leafed plant, and round-leaf mint, which is a eucalyptus-y rainforest-flavoured mint. And so I get to use those. So I love nature. I get to hang out in nature. I get to use these fabulous Australian plants that really aren't very well known. Then I get to travel frequently. So our packing and blending is done in Sri Lanka, which is where my parents were married and lived for several years. And I'm there 2 to 3 times a year and have been for the last sort of 10 years, which is wonderful. China, of course, is quite a regular destination also for me.
So it sounds like you've certainly created a role for yourself that fits in with your desires to travel and everything, really.
Yeah. I guess as an entrepreneur, whilst there are so many different pieces of advice about, you know, working on the business, not in it, and all, I, when I look, have held on to the pieces that I particularly enjoy. I mean, the creative marketing elements also, in terms of getting involved in packaging design, in writing words. I enjoy writing, so writing words for the voice of Madame Flavour, which is part of the brand, that character. Mm-hmm.
So how did the Madame Flavour thing come up? Because it was that a brand, or did that just come, or was that a long conversation?
I spent probably 12 months preparing the brand before I launched. So thinking, you know, looking at what are the brands that already exist, who drinks tea, where might there be gaps. So in Australia at the time, we had fairly traditional nod to England kind of brands here mostly, things like Twinings and Lipton and Tetley. They tended to be masculine. And in fact, it's mostly women that were drinking more special tea. So I could see a niche, or sorry, a gap in a more feminine space and a more contemporary, probably less English space. And then I put it to our agency and said, this is what I'm trying to create. Come back to me. And I liked the idea of a woman of a certain, because Madame, I mean, again, French mother, Madame means married woman. And so I liked the idea of a character who's a little older and a little wiser and someone that you could, imagine had this fabulous, sophisticated, interesting life and life experience. The agency made a list of, they brainstormed a couple of hundred names, gave me the top 100, and the second I ran my finger down that page and saw Madame Flavour, it's just like, that is it. This is a name that could, you know, it's a powerful, memorable, fabulous name.
It is actually. It has a real sense of gravitas about it. It's like you really sense like, you know, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah. And this is a real brand. But also you can really, and our customers have bought into this little bit of fantasy about, you know, is there this woman? So we receive lots of letters from tea drinkers who have loved the tea. It's provoked some beautiful experiences with family or friends or feelings, and they very often write "Dear Madame Flavour" to begin the letter.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, because the packet of tea comes with a paper insert with the story. I seem to remember.
It does.
And I've lost that paper insert now. So, well done on that. I think it's absolutely brilliant. So, do you run a big team for you with this project?
I run a team of just 6 people, and people are often surprised by that because they see the brand, and we're in supermarkets throughout Australia and New Zealand, so I guess that's a couple of thousand of supermarkets. They assume that we must be a larger, a much larger business, but in fact 6 key people, and then the blending is done externally, the logistics are done externally as well.
I mean, that's not surprising to me, because I know a bit more about the industry. I mean, I have a biscuit company who I work with on and off, in Scotland, and they are in most of the Scottish supermarkets. Not a huge range of stuff in there, but they have a few lines in most Scottish supermarkets. But there are 2 of them who are the key people, and they employ probably about 4 staff. So again, another six person company. Which looks bigger than it is, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And I think over time, I've found ways to be really efficient. You know, I have a couple of my team who work remotely within Australia, but remotely, and I find it works fabulously, because, you know, everyone's very clear about what we're doing, and we just, you know, get on and do it, basically. So it's very interesting. I feel that whilst you do need to be careful about technology, there's no doubt it can make things more efficient. And also over time, you know, there are systems and ways of doing things that we've built up that allow us to be very efficient.
It's certainly something that's grown in interest in the UK, because I was down in London over the new year, and I saw a couple of tea shops that specialize in mixology, so it's kind of getting the same mythology of coffee is, I think, in the same way. I mean, in this shop I bought some chocolate and chili tea, and it was just, it's amazing stuff. I mean, it doesn't grow very, it goes quite dark, but, and you can drink it with or without milk, but what is interesting, you drink it and you get the chocolate hit and then you get the chili hit. But what is interesting, if you hold your nose and just hold your nose and then just drink it, you don't get the chocolate. So the chocolate's coming out of the smell.
Flavour, yeah, absolutely.
It's just amazing. It's an amazing drink.
It actually is. It can become, you know, I said earlier it's not so complex because it's shelf-stable and it tends to only have a handful of ingredients, but it can be very complex, actually. I did some experimenting with a range of dessert teas, which I called tea treats. And one of them was a mint chocolate chocolate rooibos, which is the South African red bush. It's, yeah. It's a herbal plant.
And
it's quite dark in the cup, which gives the sort of sensory illusion of it being a little stronger, and people like that. But I did over 100 iterations of that blend to get sufficient chocolate into it whilst not having so much that it started to become a hot chocolate, you know, like what is this sort of Frankenstein? You know, it was really quite challenging because it was new territory. And so I ended up using cocoa nibs, cocoa shells, as well as some chocolate liquid flavour. Yeah, very, very interesting process. And as you say, really, really complex. And now there are all sorts of I'm just trying to think what else is there that's apart from just the dry tea, there's the whole idea of uses for the tea, such, you know, you say mixology, you know, tea cocktails are really big in Australia at the moment, because there's something about, you know, having tea in a cocktail that just makes it feel so much gives you greater permission, it's healthy.
I can hear your passion in this. I can hear you're talking about the mixology and talking about making these tea desserts. I can hear there is something in here for you which is far more than just making tea.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a creative expression for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what else is in your life way outside of the tea business? What do you do for exploring your passion and joy outside of that?
Well, there is a beautiful 12-year-old daughter who has just entered year 7, and so she is obviously very important to me, and I love spending time with her. We together do go to Gippsland that I was mentioning before, which is about a 3-hour drive, and we have a rammed earth house there, which I'm not sure if there would be many rammed earth, or there aren't many anywhere, but it tends to be more of a warm climate thing because so there are walls made with dirt, some sand, a small percentage of cement, and then there's formwork, it's poured in, compressed, the forms are removed, and you have a freestanding, beautiful, almost stone, sandstone-looking wall. So I've built a house from rammed earth, and we go there and just take it very gently. We go for walks, there are neighbours, we cook, we watch the lyrebirds and the koalas and the wallabies outside, the wombats. So that's how I completely relax and just feel very, very peaceful and take the weight of the responsibility of running a business off my shoulders for a couple of days.
It sounds great.
I do also love to salsa dance, which is a bit different, but I guess something else where I get to be, you know, fully in the moment, particularly when I'm dancing with a good partner. That's quite a joyous experience as well. And then travel is the other thing I do a lot of.
Mm-hmm. So what is success to you? Because, I mean, there's we all had this success model given to us in our youth. And I think the traditional success model is somewhat broken. So now we're all kind of looking at defining it for ourselves. What's success for you?
Yeah, I think success for me has varied over time, and also varies kind of sometimes depending on how I'm feeling at the time. On the one hand, success for me is about living a relatively peaceful life these days, you know, feeling a sort of fundamental level of stability and confidence. And that comes partly from relationships, you know, close and connected relationships with others. It comes partly from, I guess, using myself in the sense of doing what I'm good at and putting energy into it. It comes from looking after myself, which I am doing increasingly, because I think in those corporate years, I'm clear for me in those corporate years, I was extremely driven to get to a top of something. and I was really, really hard on myself all the time. And on the one hand, it had its benefit in the sense of it did, I guess, get me to a point in my career and have me grow. But, you know, there's a lot of damage in the way we speak to ourselves. I'm clear that I was not at all and am not at all alone in that. You know, there's no doubt that also having created something like Madame Flavour that has given joy, even though it's only tea, to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people is deeply satisfying to me. I think success is also about doing something greater than yourself or doing something that is making a positive contribution in some way to others. I think it's a real balance between looking after yourself and doing for others, you know, and it's easy to get it wrong either way, like totally selfish or maybe sometimes victim otherwise or victim martyr.
It's interesting. You point out, you bring out that sense of the success is you ran the success model when you were in corporate, by the sound of it. And it's interesting, a lot of people went, that's the point. I think a lot of it, when people get into employment for themselves or become their own guide to their life as such, then their success model changes completely. And yeah, and there are still people that want to actually own a massive business. You know, Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. God knows why, but you know.
I wonder if there isn't an age piece as well. I turned 54, I'm nearly 52, and I think that, I still have plenty of energy. There may be a little bit of a reduction in energy, but I also think that just what I value has changed over time. You know, the amount of time I have left has become something I'm more aware of. And, yeah, look, when I started Madame Flavour, the intention was, you know, global business, 100 million turnover type objective within, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. What's the plan for Madame Flavour?
Yeah, all from the spare room of the house with no investment, no capital, no backers. Whereas more recently I have, whilst one needs to keep, you know, there needs to be a level of growth in terms of just refreshing and freshness. And, you know, I started to question, well, why do we need to become any bigger than we are? You know, it kind of works for me to be the size that we are. I love the customers that we have. You know, we with Virgin Airlines, we're with Sofitel, some fabulous customers. How about just enjoying where we are rather than trying to constantly get somewhere else? Which is, of course, you know, very much a sort of new way of thinking anyway, isn't it, more broadly?
Well, that's part of the problem that the big tech companies have got, because they sold out to investors based on a kind of like a dream. Yeah. And now they have to go and get that. And what they have to go and do is they sacrifice the dream. So whereas Google used to say, do no evil, that thing kind of slightly slid off their... you know, and it's like, I'm not saying that Google is evil, but I think some of their methods now are questionable. So, and I think that happens to a lot of large businesses. And I think if you can retain and maintain that sense of what it's for, rather than growing for the sake of it, there's a lot to be said for that.
Sorry, I just missed that last page.
Yeah, I think we've got a bit of a connection issue. I was saying that it's a benefit to be able, when we can grow to the size, to a size, but still retain what we're doing it for, then that's the right way to do it. Whereas growing for the sake of growth because investors want their 10%, you start doing things that you probably wouldn't have done in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that makes me think about two things. One is I have always in the background had that slight concern about wanting to grow, but at what point? And I think there has to be a point where it does become less personal in terms of the customer experience of the brand or the business. And for me, that personal touch is an absolutely critical piece of what turns me on, and also just what our customers love. What was the other one? I've lost it now.
That's okay. So I'm at the point in the conversation where I kind of hand the microphone over to you. It's like, is there anything that you would like to say that you think you need to say? It's like, yeah, what's the question I haven't asked you?
I think you've asked me quite a few questions.
yeah, but this is the question. This is the question when you're going to go, oh, I wish I'd said that. Well, now is your chance.
I just think, look, I think it's a very interesting area to explore how we're doing life in our sort of midlife time. I think it's a fascinating question to explore how one can do life well and what that even means. And I think it's very, very different for everyone. I think, you know, in these times where we have so much, you know, versus genuine survival that it was and is for most of the planet still, you know, that's the big question, isn't it? Depending on what your belief system is, you know, I'm an atheist, so I don't necessarily, or I can't turn there and say that I'm, you know, I don't believe I'm here for any particular purpose. You know, it's a real existential challenge that I tend to resolve by lots of reflection, by cultivating friends who are also, you know, interested in thinking and growing. And I guess for me, it's about trying to evolve towards kinder and more loving, a kinder and more loving society, and me contributing to that. That's where I'm heading and what I feel excited about for my future as a human being.
Which brings us to the last question, really, and that would be, is like, for you, what is the meaning of life?
Is it 2076? What's that? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
I know. That one always comes out with the meaning. That's part of it. Yeah, everyone comes up with the answer 42. And I'm kind of go, yeah, we've 42? Done that a few times.
Yeah. Oh,
we've
sorry.
Done that a few times now. We've done that a few times now.
At least I didn't say 42. So what is the meaning of life, law?
What is the meaning of life for you? That's the point, though, isn't it? We all have, I think it means different things to different people. And obviously, I have a lot of admiration for people that have that spiritual connection or that religious connection where they believe in something to that level. It doesn't work for me. I don't have that level of belief. So I have to come up with a new answer.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious what you think, you know, what your view on that is.
I don't think that there is any meaning to life. I think that we are driven to continue existence and the species because that is the nature of life. And therefore, I think that we make our own meaning and we make of it what we will. I think genuinely, you know, everyone is completely free to do whatever they want to do with their lives. For me, I would like to leave the planet in a better place than it was when I, you know, when I attend funerals and I sit there thinking, wow, if that was me, what would I want them to be saying? I would want to have touched some people I would like to have given people joy, given people a sense of connection and love. I would like to have left the world some fabulous new human beings, such as my daughter, who are more evolved than I am. It's really that simple for me. It's that simple.
That's fantastic. Mm. That's great. And, you know, it does seem a very common thread in terms of from other guests, a lot of other guests, of the sense that I get of it is life has absolutely no purpose or meaning whatsoever other than the meaning or purpose that you choose to give it. Mm. That's what seems to have come back to me. And that's become my viewpoint, because when I first started this podcast, I had no viewpoint. And I guess that's where I am now. So I work at it every day to give life meaning for me. I think that's the best thing I can say.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in what's the meaning of life for you?
Well, as I said, it's about, for me, a lot of it's about how can I spread this message? How can I get people to evaluate their own lives? That's part of the drive of this podcast. Because if everybody answered these simple questions for themselves, what am I passionate about? What is success for me? And what's the meaning of life for me? If we all knew the answers to those three things, we'd all be getting on far better than we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, particularly given that, you know, the way society is set up, there is such a pull to just become, you know, robotic workers who, when not working, are staring at devices. And, you know, you really have to be quite assertive about it. Even the stopping and thinking is quite a strong and unusual act, and really swimming against the pull of the way we've set things up.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's a fascinating conversation. That could be a podcast in itself, that particular one.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for your time today, Corinne. So how do people get in touch with you? Obviously, they can buy your tea.
Yes, they can buy my tea online. We have recently added an online shop, so we are shipping all over the world now, including Scotland.
Wow.
So madamflavor.com.
Okay.
And me personally, corinnenoyes.com. I have my
fantastic. Well, those links website. Will be on the website. Those links will be on the website and stuff. And do you do social media?
Madam Flavor does Instagram and Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I connected
you through LinkedIn, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. LinkedIn's been I got in early for some reason on LinkedIn, and I've found it quite powerful in terms of building connections with really interesting people.
That's great. Thank you. Okay. So, Corinne Noyes, thank you so much for your time and being with me today. It's been a real pleasure talking to you about tea and your life. So thank you so much for being with me today.
Absolutely welcome, Paul. Thank you.
That was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Corinne Noyes. You can find her details on the website, as with all my guests. In Corinne's case, there are links to her website where you can buy her tea. So in other news, I was at an event in Brighton this weekend past with 200 other people who were all searching for that special thing that would make a difference in their lives and their business. It was called the Extravaganza. And it was an event organised by Dan Meredith and his team. It was time to hear speakers and connect with people all with a similar mindset. Dan offers a free group on Facebook, and I've mentioned his name many times before. There are over 15,000 members, and it's called Coffee with Dan. So I urge you to go and check it out. Now, my weekend was fantastic. So here's the question for you. How do you get what you need in your life and your business? Is it podcasts, books, online groups, or live in-person events? It will be good to hear your thoughts. I've posted the question on the Facebook page, so your comments can be put there, and I look forward to reading them. So that wraps up this program, and I have some more shortcasts that I'll be putting out next week. And this year is shaping up with some great interviews. So please subscribe, follow, and of course say nice things on iTunes if you can. Well, it only remains for me to say thanks for listening, and I appreciate your time and attention. So I'll catch you later. All the best. And that was Life, Passion and Business with your host Paul Harvey and my guests Guy and Ilan Furman. What a great program. I so enjoyed that conversation with you guys, and I am looking forward to perhaps catching up with them again. They did promise to do some live coaching with me on the program at some stage, and maybe we'll take them up on that option. So if you would like to catch up with Guy and Ilan, you certainly can. All the details you will find on the Life, Passion and Business website underneath this podcast. It only remains me to say thank you for taking the time to listen to these shows, because it's such a pleasure to create them, and I hope they bring you some useful content or information. And on that subject, I am always looking for interesting guests. If you think you have something to offer this program, please get in touch. If you visit the website, there is a guest section where you can just send me some details and let's talk. If you are enjoying this podcast series, please support the show by liking and sharing our content. Maybe even submitting a review to iTunes. It all supports us to build the program and build our audience. Anyway, as I said, thank you for listening, and I hope to catch you later.